Welcome back. I am Gary Parr.
And I'm Nicola Parkman.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk. And, oops, no Christine. Nicola Parkman from Hands Across the Sea Samplers filling in for Christine this week because Christine had to go on a trip for the paying job. And it sounded like it was going to be one of those sales meeting, everybody get together and discuss strategy type things. But her first images on Instagram were beachwear, ocean views, and adult beverages.
Well, that doesn't sound bad.
No, it doesn't sound bad at all. But so I'm just going to assume that's a front for hard work, you know, strategy, planning, all those things. And it's just, you know, deceptive. But then there was a sunset shot, too. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but we're going to give her the benefit of the doubt and say she's working.
Oh, you have to bond before you start.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay. All right, just give me, I need to note that. You have to bond before you start. Okay, got it. So anyway, Christine is not with us this week. Nicola, very kind enough to take some time and fill in for Christine for the midweek show. So thank you for that, Nicola.
And, you're very welcome.
And among many things we have on the list here, Nicola has a new book. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But while we're talking about other things, you can start to speculate and guess about what Nicola's new book is about. And, yeah, samplers.
It's not a book I've written, though, Gary.
Oh, okay, okay. You purchased someone else's work. Okay.
It is, yes.
But samplers.
Yes. Okay. I've had a very good post lately. It's all been sampler related.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with
no.
that.
No. Nothing yep. changes.
Yeah. So we'll get to that. Anxious to hear about that. And then Nicola's got some travel planned and you've got a band sampler that we need to explore that a little bit that you're working on. I'm curious about that.
But, okay, we'll do that.
Yeah, but I do need to get one thing out of the way. The terrific conversation with Mary Corbett and her sister Sarah DeBrie this past Sunday. And I don't normally re-listen to them, but I had an hour drive this morning to a meeting. And so that one just popped on in my phone in the car. And so I just let her run and listen to it. And one thing I'd forgotten to do in the Sunday page was put up links for the bead storage boxes that Mary and I use. And that we talked about at some length as a way to deal with the Mill Hill bead packaging. So I looked those up, and there'll be links for this show. But bead creatively named, beadstoragesolutions.com has them. And then I found at Amazon Darice, D-A-R-I-C-E, Elizabeth Ward Bead Storage Solutions. So I'll put links up for those of you who want to no longer throw Mill Hill beads all over the carpet. I'll look those up because they really are great boxes and it's a great little storage system. And they do, each of those things has labels for them.
I was listening to the podcast, it's happened to me as well. Those little packages, when you open them, they're like springboards. The slightest vibration and they bounce absolutely everywhere. I think we've all done it. So I could sympathize with Mary.
Yeah. Well, somebody suggested, I think it was Jane Wood suggested that she opens it inside a gallon Ziploc bag, which I thought was a good solution. Because when it flips, then 90% of the beads should stay in the bag.
Yes, yeah. I've always used those. They're sort of like plastic little pots, and they twist on top of each other, so they stack. I think Bead Along do them, and they call them stackable containers.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen those, Gary? They're completely see-through. And they're sort of like little circular pots that maybe you would put, I don't know, if you go to a makeup store and you want some sort of cream, they'll put a little bit in there for you to take home.
Okay.
So
the next time I go to the makeup store, I should ask for these little circular.
Please.
Okay. All right. Thanks. I'll make a point.
Right. The storage is always, you know, it's always a thing, isn't it? Because if you can store things properly, you can see what you've got as well. Because if you put things away in drawers, you know, they sort of disappear into the black hole sometimes.
Right. Yeah. And beads are a problem because you want small storage containers because they don't take up a lot of space. But then you need to see them. But then small storage containers in general can be a problem in terms of spilling things. And on top of that then is when you're actually using beads and you have them in some little tray, not knocking that over too. You know, as you're stitching, my last time was having a tray and I had it sitting on top of the needlework and I finished a thread and went to turn the piece over to tie it off. And of course, you know what happened with all the beads.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
We've all been there.
So anyway, I wanted to make sure that the links got out for people who are looking for those because they really are a nice little solution. So you use the little makeup jars then?
Yeah, I'm sure they have a lot of other uses as well, but I first saw these on the makeup counters and I took some products, you know, sample products home. When I finished them, I thought, oh gosh, this is going to be really good for beads. And then I went online and found them and I ordered quite a few of them and they seem to work really well. I used to have like a plastic sort of like little case and you lifted the lid and there was all little compartments there that I could put them in. But then once that opened when it was upside down and that was a real mess.
Oh no.
That was a real mess. So I just find these little stackables much nicer.
Yeah. Bet you were not happy then. Oh, man.
Mm-mm.
What a mess.
No, I was not.
And that's just it with beads. Even if you save them all, you know, if you do something dumb like that and then you spill them, then you got to sort them. You know, there's a two-day project. Oh, jeez.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
there we go. Yep. So, and then next item up. Now, Yvette Stanton, of course, you know, she has a book coming up, and she's about as secretive as Fort Knox, and Fort Knox is where the U.S. stores its gold, or used to, I don't know. But anyway, we always that phrase in the States is there's no place more secure. I don't know what it is in England or in Australia, but she guards the next subject to her books like with a 30 million gun armory or something, never shares them. So her next book that is coming out next year, she just announced the other day that what that's going to be about. And I think it's pretty exciting. And the first thing that is it's not white work. So there's a culture shock for you right there.
Yes. Because we associate Yvette with white work forms of embroidery, don't we?
She is kind of the queen of that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
So it's maybe you can say it better than I, smoig?
Schmuck. Schmuck?
Yeah, so you're better than that. You're better than I am. Go do it.
I think for our listeners, it's spelt S for Sierra, M for Mike, then it's an O with a slash through, Y for Yankee, G for George, Schmog. And it's pattern darning from Norway. And it's very pretty, Gary. Very effective. And it comes from Telmark in Norway, and in particular from East Telmark. And I've got to admit, although I have seen this type of embroidery, I never knew what it was. But you see it on the national costumes of Norway, and in particular on the collars and the cuffs and the beautiful belts that the ladies and the men wear. And it's a very sort of beautiful form of embroidery. It's reversible. And it's basically a very short satin stitch, maybe over 2, 3, or 4 threads. And the threads are worked parallel to each other. And then you turn your fabric around and work them in other directions, so they then form a really beautiful geometric pattern. It's beautiful. This is the sort of work that I really enjoy. I think this type of stitching is very therapeutic and very effective. And it can be stitched with several different colours or just, a single colour, but it's not white. It's stitched on white linen, but, it's just all these beautiful colours. Very, very nice.
Yeah, I've often wondered, because you see, especially in Yvette's books, her Hardanger book, you see the costumes and the white work, the Hardanger lace work around the edges, and then I've often wondered, well, what is that, those colorful bands that they run down the center, and because they really are quite beautiful, and they really show off the costumes, and so now we know what it is. Say it again. I need to practice this.
Well, I might not be saying this correctly, but I think it's schmog.
Schmog. Okay.
I think.
I'm going with you. I'm going with you on this one. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's very beautiful. And Yvette on her blog has a short video about it. And I just sort of say to everybody, watch it. It's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So and we'll have a link for that video. But, yeah, she does talk and then shows some examples. And somewhere she has examples shown in her her booth in the show, a trade show she was at just this past week.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And it's the Bunad. Do I say that right? Bunad clothing.
I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but that's how I would say it. Yeah. And that's basically the sort of the national costume of the Telemark or the Norway, And what's really interesting in Norway, people actually dress up in their national costumes and they will parade around. And brides today don't get married in white wedding dresses. They get married in their national costume. And I thought that's just so lovely.
Yeah. Well, that's that culture. Yeah, I really admire that culture. I mean, you guys have it in England, too, where you hang on to those old traditions and keep them alive and really celebrate them. I just think that's so neat that is kept, because it fades out rather quickly in the States. I mean, there's examples all over of the old cultures, but not like you guys in Europe do. I really think that's admirable, the way you guys keep those things going and celebrate them. And I mean, it's, because that's the history. It's important.
Yeah. This time of year, we often see Morris dancers, which is men dancing with sticks and bells. Have you ever seen that, Gary?
No, don't know that one. No.
Oh, gosh, that's a whole other thing. It's all associated with May Day, but it carries on throughout the summer. It's just a lovely tradition. It's so lovely to see these traditions. And I think when you go to London, it's lovely watching Trooping of the Colour and seeing the Beefeaters in the Tower of London. It's
right.
Very interesting.
Well, it is, but it's the, the costuming, the meaning. So much of that has meaning. And I mean, it's the culture of the country and your heritage. And to keep that going, I just think my family came from Britain back in the Revolutionary War, but we don't have any traditions that we keep other than things that have developed here, around the holidays and things. But to have those kinds of things and to not do a half-baked effort, go full out to celebrate them and to keep them, I just think is really admirable, and it keeps that history going, and it's worth it. And Yvette, all of Yvette's books, all celebrating in one way or another these old traditions and keeping them alive. And you look at Nordic Needle, the people we talked to here a couple of weeks ago, and their effort, the core of their effort is to keep these old stitching techniques alive and not let them fade into history. And it's great. I just think it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it just goes to show how important needlework is to civilization.
Right.
you know, when you think back to, oh God, you know, thousands of years ago when you had a bone needle and a piece of, I don't know, maybe catgut or something like that, and people made clothing and they made pouches. Needlework is very much part of the human race.
Right. Well, and you've demonstrated that, and you've educated me so much just with samplers. What a tremendous treasure trove of history from these old samplers, and it isn't that it isn't the girls that stitched them, but it's all the history that surrounds them that really comes to life through these just these simple needle and thread things. Some of them aren't so simple. That's the other thing. It's so impressive what these young ladies did. But you know, that's another thing, and the history that you've dug up with your patterns and others who do it too. It's to me, it's as much fun as the sampler, just to learn about these girls and when they grew up and what they went through. And yeah, it's great stuff. Yeah, all out of needle and thread.
That's right. I'm going to just mention something. It's not the book that arrived recently in the post about samplers, but I bought another book that came last week. And when I opened it, just inside, there was a wonderful saying: "May all things made with your hands show your heart." And I thought, that is such a lovely saying. And that's what makes handwork so beautiful, so endearing, that you put so much love and care into doing it, that it does show your heart.
Yes.
And it makes it special.
Yes. Yeah, and that's just it. You can't. Even if you do a half-baked effort, you still have to put a lot of energy and effort into any needlework thing. And, yeah, it has to show. It really does. Yes.
Yeah. That's what makes it so special.
Yep.
May all things made with your hands show your heart.
That's nice.
It is nice, isn't it? That would be a nice little verse to stitch onto a sample.
Yeah, I know somebody who does sampler work. Maybe she's interested in putting that into a sampler. I don't know. Or not, you know.
Yeah, but yes, because Christine's looking for something for a sampler, isn't she?
She is.
Yes.
You could do it too, you know. Go for it. Line it up. Now, be careful buying those books. Because I think Mary Corbett's library room is full, so you get too many now, and you're going to have a hard time getting rid of them there. You're getting that Mary Corbett book disease, so I'm just, you know, just a heads up.
Oh, gosh, I think you should see my collection of books.
Uh-oh, too late?
Yes, it's much too late, much too late. I love listening to books as I stitch, so I don't tend to buy novels in the written form anymore, but I am terrible for going into secondhand bookstores, and I'll sort of like just spend the afternoon there browsing. Then I come out with like two sacks of books that I have no chance of carrying back to the car. But I love books. I love books that you can dip into and dip out of.
Yes.
I love the old books on needlework. You can learn so much from some of these old books.
Oh yeah, there's a lot in those things that if you just sit down and explore, they're fun to just sit and just read too. Even though there's just lots of charts and stuff in there, they're just fun to look at and speculate about. So you listen to audiobooks then when you stitch? That's your
I listen to. We have Radio 4 in the UK, which is a very interesting spoken radio station, so you can keep up with current affairs, and they do some lovely dramatizations, and I listen to that a lot when I'm stitching as well. But I love a good book. And I also, when I'm working on a sampler, I like to listen to books set in the period as well.
Okay.
You know, it sort of puts you in the right, it puts you in the time period that the little girl was in.
Right.
So.
Look at you. Carry the theme all the way through. I'm impressed.
Well, when I stitched Elizabeth Beaven, I re-listened for the umpteenth time to the Outlander series. So I found I was coming out with little Scottish words in my conversation.
Well, I was having a conversation with Jean Lee, email conversation, because I have that Elizabeth Beaven chart.
Yes.
And because she has that 5260 linen that she's excited about. And so yes. I was exploring doing that, stitching that on that linen. And her comment was, and I hadn't even looked at the size, and I still haven't. She says that you men, was it you men always want to do gigantic or big projects? I didn't realize Elizabeth Beaven was that big. I still haven't even looked. I should have looked to see. Is that a big sampler?
I'm probably not the person to ask because I love big samplers. So to me, Elizabeth isn't that big. But she could be big to some people. You see, okay. It's all how you see things, isn't it? Elizabeth Beaven's stitch count. Let's have a little look at that.
If I was prepared, I'd have that chart right in front of me. But
her stitch count is 311 stitches by 461 stitches. So yes, I suppose she is quite big, isn't she? If you were using, say 36 count, which is sort of one that many, many people would use, the design area would be 17.28 inches by 25.61 inches.
That's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's healthy. Okay. Yeah. All right. I don't care. I'm stitching it anyway.
I don't care. She is very beautiful, Gary.
Yeah, well, that's why I picked it out. Of all years, that one stood out for me. That and Borden, the newest one, Borden. Is that right?
Sarah Borden, yeah. She's absolutely stunning.
Yes, I have really, that. Have that ordered from the Welcome Stitchery, waiting for that to come in, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, those two just really stood out for me in all of them.
Well, we've got some really exciting ones coming out. I've got a model arrived from the US today, which was just so exciting to open the package. And I couldn't help it. I started crying. It was just so beautiful.
You say you got a model. You mean one of the people that stitches models for you finished one of your upcoming samplers?
That's right, and it arrived back in the post. And it's ever such a funny thing because obviously I've studied and spent a lot of time with the original when I was charting it, and I've seen constant updates and photographs of the model as it's grown. But there's nothing like seeing the model because the model is my baby.
Yes.
And I think when you're model stitching, it's really exciting because you're recreating something that was originally stitched hundreds of years ago. And you're the very first person to see that come alive. Forget the reproductionist who charted it. It's when it's being stitched, that's when it becomes alive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very special stitching models. But when this one came today and it flew across the Atlantic in about 3 or 4 days, I wasn't expecting it. And when I opened the post, it was just, my husband said to me, "What's wrong? Why are you crying?" I said, "It's so beautiful." But there we are.
So when you chart one of these things, you don't stitch it then. So you chart it and then you send it to someone else to stitch it unless you have chosen to be the one who stitches the model.
Well, stitching takes a long time. And you might only be able to stitch 2 or 3 samplers a year. And I do stitch my own designs as well. But I think it's really important to match samplers up with model stitchers, because it's the stitcher that breathes life into the sampler and puts heart into the sampler as well. So I think it's very nice when samplers mean something special to the person who's stitching them. And mm-hmm. obviously every sampler I chart, it's special to me as well. But, you know, you can't possibly stitch every single chart. Unfortunately,
no.
I wish I could. And of course, you see, the other thing is that at Hands Across the Sea Samplers, when a model stitches a chart for us, that sampler will go back to that model stitcher. I don't keep them. I think that if you are stitching something, you have to stitch it for yourself because that's what makes it special to you. You know, you don't have a baby and give the baby away. So although we have them for a little while and we like to sort of have our models to exhibit for a little while, those models do go back to the people who stitched them.
Okay.
And I can't end up with originals and models. I am just struggling for space at the moment for my samplers. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I forget you have the collection of originals that you're trying to keep under control. Yes.
Oh, gosh. Well, the other thing that came in the post today was an antique sampler as well.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Yes. It was a very exciting post today.
I guess.
Yeah. And that was lovely to open that parcel as well, because no matter how beautiful photographs of samplers are, there's nothing like actually seeing them in the flesh.
Right. I'm sure you don't want to get into what that sampler was, but when that comes, when one of those comes in the post there, great deal of care on opening that up. I'm sure you have to be very careful when you open the package, or is it packed such that you don't worry about it? These things just strike me as incredibly delicate pieces that you must handle very carefully. Is that not the case?
I've had samplers arrive in the post where the glass has been smashed, Normally, when I buy from auction, I use a company called Mailbox or Pack and Send, and they're specialists. They go to the auction house, they collect them, and they pack them very carefully. And what they do with the glass is they tape the glass so that if it does break, all the splinters of glass are held by the tape and don't go into the sampler. But I've had them where they haven't been taped very well. And, you know, you've had to sort of pick glass out of the sampler, which is just very worrying because the little splinters can cut the threads.
Right.
And sometimes you have samplers that aren't framed. You know, they're just sort of in a very sorry state that arrive with you. So, but sometimes, you know, you have these parcels come and they're so well packed. It's in England, in children's parties, you have a game called Pass the Parcel, and it's like a parcel that's really well wrapped. And when the music stops, the child gets to take a layer of wrapping off.
Oh.
And it's do you have that game?
I don't know about it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it goes on and on and on. You're taking off layers and layers of wrapping. And sometimes you have this great big huge box that comes and you sort of get this package from outside, you start unwrapping it, and it goes down and down and down. It ends up to be a really small item inside. And you're surrounded by packaging and little polystyrene beads. And those polystyrene beads are just as bad to pick up as little beads that we stitch with.
Yeah, they are. They get a little static in them, and yeah, they're everywhere. Yep. Okay. All right, more sampler stuff coming up, but we have to get applause to Yvette Stanton. Get our Yvette Stanton segment. We'll call it an Yvette Stanton segment. Get this video. So she entered into fabricstore.com, had a competition for handwork and other things, and she entered two pieces, a lampshade and a runner. And then invited people who follow her blog to vote, because it was a popularity contest type thing. And it was not easy to get registered to vote, because you had to register and give your name and address or your email address to this fabricstore.com people. And I kind of had to fight through it. At one point, the little voice in my head's going, really, you're going through all this to vote for Yvette's piece? But I did. I fought through it. And then I voted the next day. So she came out, I think it was third or something in the popularity contest. But the neat thing is that the employees of fabricstore.com all got together and voted on what they felt was the most creative blah, blah, blah piece. And she ended up being the grand jury winner for her Hardinger runner that is in her early style Hardinger book. And you have that book.
I do. It's a beautiful book. It's one that's well worth adding to your library. And this Table Runner, it is gorgeous, Gary. For people who have the book, it's on page 31. It's just gorgeous. It looked beautiful on anybody's table. It's 1.2 metres by 33 centimetres, which I think is about 47 inches by 13 inches. And it's one that's, I think, very achievable for people to actually stitch themselves. A beautiful runner.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Now, see, I'm feeling like we need to pause right here so Mary Corbett can weave her way through her piles of books to find her copy. So a moment here for Mary. Okay, that's all you get, Mary. So this, the runner is beautiful that she shows in her picture. And then, so in the book, we have all the instructions and everything for making that, huh?
We do, yes. Yes. And the stitches are cable stitch, double cable stitch, dove's eye with cross, square eyelet, four-sided stitch, and cloister stitch, and some sort of triangles, which are stitched with satin stitches. So it's all very doable and very, very pretty. Yvette has a lovely way of putting combinations of stitches together to create these beautiful designs.
Yeah, she does. She does have an eye, doesn't she?
She does, yes. Yeah, very much so. And, of course, she also entered her lampshade as well, which is on page 39, the instructions for that, and that's gorgeous as well. I've never made a lampshade.
Yeah, how does she, I've wondered about that because that's a beautiful lampshade. Do you buy some kind of a wire frame and then stretch it over that? How is that done?
You buy the frames, and Yvette on page 40 shows you how to put, how to attach the fabric after you've stitched the design onto the lampshade frame. Okay. So it's all there for you.
Just buy the book.
Just buy the book. Yes.
Absolutely. Buy the book.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book. It's quite a substantial book, actually. It's about 160 pages.
Oh my!
It's a really interesting book.
And then we've come to learn here before we started that you are multi-talented because you do Hardinger in addition to sampler X's on samplers, but you do Hardinger and really learn from Yvette then.
Yes, I'm a self-taught stitcher, and I did learn how to do Hardanger from Yvette's books. I think Hardanger is such a beautiful form of embroidery. I love intricate work, so I also love the pulled and drawn thread work as well. And I've got lots of little Hardanger doilies and table runners and mats in my home. And also, they make lovely presents as well. So I've often done little doilies to give away as presents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've yet to buy one of her books, but I've yet to hear anyone suggest that they're anything short of absolutely stunning in the way they're put together. And
they are. Yeah. Very well presented. And I like the way that Yvette explains things. I love her instructions. And although I'm not a left-handed stitcher, she gives instructions for left-handed stitchers as well, which is good. I'm sure, yes. You know, left-handers appreciate that.
I do. I admire her. I applaud her for that. Sticking up for the left-handers, the southpaws of the world, yes.
Yeah. But the stitch diagrams are just so well done. And I think that comes because Yvette's got a background of, I believe, graphic design. And these stitch diagrams are second to none. They're fantastic.
Right. Yeah. Somebody.
A good diagram is something that helps me recreate, something. So I appreciate that because I'm dyslexic. So I find diagrams far better than reading how to do something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. With that background in publishing that she has, that gives her that extra little edge.
Absolutely.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
So congratulations to Yvette. That's terrific. That runner, and obviously, you know, if you're at all interested, the Hardinger books, you have the first one and now the early style Hardinger.
I think I've got all Yvette's books.
Oh. They're truly a collector.
They're just lovely. Yeah, the Portuguese white work one is very interesting as well. I haven't done any Portuguese white work, but I really enjoyed reading about it. And again, that's quite a substantial book. It's like 104 pages, beautifully illustrated. The stitch diagrams are fantastic. So that's a good one for anybody else, to add to their library.
What ground cloth do you use for just a straight linen? Is there some specialty or special ground cloth that you prefer?
I like Murano when I've been doing my Hardanger.
Murano.
In the UK, that's something that you can get from online quite easily. I'm just looking at the stitch count now as we're talking. It's 32 count.
Okay, 32 count linen.
Yes. Well, it's cotton even weave made by Zygarde. That's the one I like to use. But I've done drawn and pulled thread work on 40 count Newcastle linen on a sampler. But if I was doing a Hardanger piece, I would use the Murano.
Okay, is that Murano?
That's right, yes.
Okay. You can tell I'm about to buy her book, and I want to know what cloth to buy, so.
I'm not saying that's what Yvette recommends to use. That's what I've used for my Hardanger.
Well, that's all right. Nicola, if it's good enough for you, for crying out loud, it's good enough for me. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yvette uses for that table runner 36 count linen. So she doesn't specify the type of linen.
Yeah. Yeah. Because in Europe there, especially so close to Ireland, you have access to very good linen, don't you? Fairly readily accessible to you? No.
Well,
I was trying.
One of the reasons I would love to live in the US is because of your access to linen and to stores as well. So, linen's always a little bit of a gripe here.
Oh, see, I would think you could just pick that up fairly readily. No.
Well. Online, you can order linen. We have a very big store in the UK, an online store called So and So, and they're probably sort of the biggest online store, and they carry Zygarde, but they don't carry the range of colours that we particularly like for reproducing samplers. They carry a very good range, but it's more for sort of more modern embroideries. Colours.
Mm-hmm.
The colours aren't really the colours that we're looking for reproduction samplers.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. All right. Now.
Here we are.
We're talking about books. Sampled lives. Samplers from the Fitzwilliam Museum is your latest acquisition. So, what's this all about?
Well, there's an exhibition running at the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge, and it's on until April next year. And it's a fantastic exhibition. There's over 100 samplers in the exhibition. And what's really nice about this exhibition is that they're focusing on the history that these samplers have, rather than sort of focusing on the stitching, they're focusing on the girls behind the samplers.
Okay, I got to interrupt you there. The Fitzwilliam Museum, is there some orientation they have in the displays that makes them want to have this special exhibit, or is it just part of what they normally do? I mean, is there Is tapestry one of their things, or how does that work?
Well, I've never been to the Fitzwilliam myself because it's the opposite side of the country. Oh. But they do have a particularly good collection of samplers. And I think that the collection they have, the main bulk of it was gifted by two sort of benefactors. And one was a Dr. Glacier, who was a mathematician. And the other part of their collection came from Harriet Longman, whose father was an archaeologist and a great collector, and she married into the Longman publishing family, and she collected as well, and she liked collecting textiles, and she donated her collection to the Fitzwilliam. So they have, as a core of their collection, two very good collections. Plus, you know, they have lots of other samplers as well. I'm not quite sure how many samplers they actually do have in their collection, but it, you know, it's a big collection.
Mm-hmm. So this book is the book about this current exhibit then.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. And how they describe it is, they're showcasing over 100 samplers from the museum's excellent.
Holy smokes. 100 samplers in the exhibit?
That's right.
Wow.
But often unseen collection. And the display highlights the importance of samplers as documentary evidence of past lives. And it says, these beautifully embroidered and stitched samplers illuminate the lives of girls and women from the mid-17th century English Quakers to the early 20th century school pupils, encompassing their education, employment, religion, family, social status, and needlework skills. The display also highlights the individuality of each sampler, which in some cases is the only surviving document to record the existence of an ordinary young woman. And this book is a beautifully illustrated catalogue of the exhibition, and it was written by Carol Humphrey, who is the honorary keeper of textiles, and Carol is very well respected within, you know, the needlework world. And this book is just absolutely gorgeous. I haven't had a chance to read it all because it's only arrived today, but it's 242 pages.
Oh, wow.
There's over 130 full-colour photographs, and these photographs are very good resolution, so you can really see the details in the samplers. And the book, roughly to give you some sort of perspective, is about 11 inches by just over 8 inches. So it's a really nice size book as well. Mm. I've just dipped into it today because today was a bit of a busy day. I really wanted to be sort of cuddled up on the settee with this book, but no, I didn't get that chance. And the book talks so much about the identity of these girls, so it really excites me. This is the sort of book I really enjoy. Mm. And it talks about the hidden messages and the symbolism in these samplers. And
that's got to be really helpful to you then.
Also. Oh, absolutely, yes, and that's right. And it talks about you know, the identity of these girls and about the changing fashions of samplers. So yeah, it's a lovely book, and it was just a penny short of £20. Very good value.
Hmm.
So if you can't get to the exhibit, and even if you get to the exhibit, you're going to want to walk away with this book.
Okay, but I could buy this book then.
Oh, absolutely. You can go onto the Fitzwilliam's website and go into the shop side of it and just order it. It's beautiful, Gary. It's a lovely, if you're just sort of starting in samplers and you're interested in the history of them, it's a beautiful book to have.
Okay.
Really gorgeous book.
Fitzwilliam.com?
Ooh, let's have a little look and see. It is the Fitz Museum, FITZMUSEUM.CAM.AC.UK.
Holy smokes. So Fitz, FITZMUSEUM.CAM.AC.UK.
UK, that's right. That will take you to their main website. Right. Then you need to go into their shop, and then you go into exhibition catalogues. It's beautiful. And I do think with needlework books, they don't do huge, huge prints of them. So, you know, quite often they go out of print as well. So I always think get these books when they become available. You know, because they're not always around. And some of these books, when they go out of print, they command such silly prices. I was actually, I've got a beautiful book, The Embroideries at Hardwick Hall by Santina Levy. And a friend was asking me about this book, and I said, well, I think, you know, you'll be able to get it secondhand on Amazon. £225, Gary.
Oh, my. Holy smokes.
And it was probably a book that was, you know, maybe between £20 and £30
right.
when it was originally published. So I think exhibition catalogues are well worth getting.
Yeah. Well, I think, that's the case. Yeah, any of those. I mean, I've run into people who, New York, the Museum of Modern Art, you know, they'll have an exhibition book. And it's usually, you know, if you want it, get it quickly because they're gone. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, when you go to an exhibition and there's 100 samplers there, you'll look at them, but you can't take away in your mind the detail of every single sampler.
Right.
And a book is so nice to be able to study afterwards as well.
Well, the thrill of seeing them live is one thing, but yet to really appreciate them, you need to sit there with your feet propped up and just savor it through a book, yes.
That's right, yes. Yeah. I always remember years ago when I was planning a visit to the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, I was absolutely horrified to find out that they no longer have their sampler collection on exhibit in the V&A. It's actually all stored at the Clothmakers Association. Mm. And to see the samplers, you have to make an appointment, and you are allowed to pick 10 samplers, and then you'll go along at the set time. You have to go through some very tight security to get in, and then you go along to a room, and these samplers are all laid out for you. And I thought, oh gosh, no, it's so bad, I can't go and just sort of look at all these their collection. But do you know what, Gary? When a group of us went into that room and those samplers were all laid out for us, and we were allowed to study them in very close detail, and we were provided with special eyeglasses with lights so we could go right up, so we could actually study individual stitches. And then the representative from the cloth makers would turn the samplers over for us so that we could study the backs.
Oh.
It was absolutely wonderful. And I probably took away more just seeing 10 samplers than in such close detail to actually go into the V&A and walking through an exhibition gallery, just looking at them.
Right.
So that actually turned out to be a wonderful experience.
Well, and I got to believe for what you do, that to see those that many and be able to study them, that really helps you as you encounter other samplers and understanding what's been done.
Yes. And I think as well that when you have access to the back of a sampler, the back of a sampler tells you so much. And quite often the stitch path is so much clearer from the back than from the front, especially when you get to the older bun samplers. The back tells you an awful lot.
Yes. Yeah, I love studying the back. To me, that's where I learn. I don't care whether your back is clean or not. That's where I learn about how things really are structured. Okay, all right. You open the door. I gotta know what you're willing to tell about this band sampler that you're working on.
Oh, the fire sampler. Beautiful. She's just so beautiful. I cherish every minute that I sit down with that sampler. She's stitched reversibly.
Okay, but let's back up. All right, so it's Bathya, B-A-T-H-Y-A, so it's Bathya.
That's right.
Band sampler, and you got the original,
Do you remember I talked about the sampler that had been locked away in a museum's vault for over 70 years?
Yes, yes.
That is the sampler.
Oh, okay.
Right, okay.
Look at you.
Yeah, and her surname, it's Wormo, but I cannot decipher the last letter. It's either an L or a T. So it's Wormole or Wormot. So I'm just calling her Bathya.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you have the sample, the original, and you're stitching it. The colors are beautiful. The little bits that you've shown, the colors are absolutely beautiful. But it's a reversible sampler. So the first question I have for you is, why would you stitch a reversible sampler? What possible use could there be for that?
Well, the band samplers from the 1600s, they were pieces of cloth that were rolled up and kept in a workbox. And these bands were patterns that these girls and these ladies, these wives, would have stitched on clothing and on items of upholstery. So if you had a dress with a collar, you would want the embroidery on that collar or that cuff to be reversible.
Oh, okay.
Because you would see both sides of it.
Yes.
Very similar to Yvette's schmog embroidery on collars and cuffs. That's reversibly stitched as well. And so these band samplers, they are, not all band samplers, but many of them are reversibly stitched. Mm. And obviously, if you don't see the back of the sampler, you don't know that. You have to access it. And the Thayer's sampler was a very, very expensive sampler. And my husband was horrified when he saw me take it out of the frame. And it was stitched onto a piece of silk because this sampler is not stretched. It's hem stitched because it was never intended to be framed. Mm-hmm. So I took it off the silk so that I could access the back. And it's going to have to go back to to be properly resealed into the frame. And because at the back, it's all sealed with foil to protect it, from anything getting into the frame. So it's got to go back and be done. But it was well worth it because if I hadn't taken it out of the frame and exposed the back, I would not have been able to identify with all the stitches. It's like with cross stitch, if you reversibly stitch a cross stitch, you know, there's various different ways that you can do that. But when you access the back and you see the stitch path on the back, you know exactly how it's been stitched then. So that was very, very important to do.
I got to know, because I can't even picture in my head stitching reversibly. And that sampler, the little bits that you've shown online, I mean, you've got satin stitch, you've got several things working there that are all reversible. And how do you start and end threads? Is it all through pin stitches, or what are you doing with that?
Well, with stitching reversibly, it's a little bit like driving. You've got to read the road ahead. You've got to plan where you're going to start and where you're going to stop, because you've got to hide those things. So, for example, that little sneak peek I showed, you had some satin-stitched acorns, and the little cups the acorns were sat in were detached buttonhole. But leading up to those acorns, there is double running stitch, which at the moment on that sneak peek, you just see in my outward journey. I have to make a, a homeward journey as well. So I'm actually stopping and starting those where I can hide the ends under the satin stitching. You've really got to plan your journey. And as I show more of this sampler, you'll see the importance of planning ahead where you're going to do this. It's like when you're starting a row of double running stitch. Most people would start your row on the left-hand side as you're working left to right. But you don't want to start and end your thread there because there's nowhere to hide it. Mm-hmm. You would want to get a very long piece of thread and start it where you're going to satin stitch over it. And then you'll work the ends out in two different directions. Does that make sense?
Yes, I start to see now how you pull that off. Okay.
Yeah. So you've got to really plan your journey on each band.
Now, when you're stitching, are you working and viewing the front and the back at equal amounts? I mean, you must be looking at the back a lot too to make sure it stays a quality stitch.
Yes. For example, one of the stitches used is alternating double back stitch. And that's when you do, on the front, you would have three forms of cross stitch. And then you would have three stitches that are double running on the front. And on the back, where you've stitched the cross stitch on the front, it's double running on the back. Mm. So the best way that I have found to keep your stitch path in your mind is as you're stitching the front and you're seeing the front, you picture what you're stitching on the back. So you're not thinking about what you're stitching on the front because you can see that. You're holding the image in your mind of what you're creating on the back.
Oh, wow.
And if you think about it, if you are going to be stitching a double row of back stitch and you're working from the front, but you want the double row of back stitch on the back, okay? So if you enter top right and come out top left, that's your back stitch on the back of the fabric.
Mm-hmm.
So what you now do, you to create the next back stitch on the back, you're coming up at the top left, so you're bringing your thread over the front of your fabric and you're going down to bottom right, which mm-hmm. creates half a cross on the front. Yep.
Okay.
So you're going in bottom right and you're going to come out bottom left. That's created the back stitch, the bottom back stitch on the back. Then you bring your thread up the front from the bottom left and you travel across and up to the next top right. Mm-hmm. So that's like an elongated cross.
Mm-hmm.
So you've made your cross on your front. And you've made your two double running back stitches on the back. Honestly, if you sat down with me, I could show you. And you just keep in your mind what you're creating on the back. That makes it so much easier. And in fact, what I'm going to do, there's a band on Bathaya, whereby it's diagonal double back stitch on the front and double back stitch on the front and a closed herringbone version. And I'm actually going to show in the graph that band charted from the front and charted from the back, because I have found it easy as I'm stitching the front to actually follow the stitch path of the back. Sounds complicated, but it's not really.
But regardless, some concentration involved here. You don't just mindlessly stitch along. You've got to pay attention.
You have to think about it, yes.
What a great challenge. Wow.
Yeah. But I've been a little bit naughty, actually, because I've dipped down to that band that I did the sneak peek of with the acorns, because I love doing satin stitching and I love the detached buttonhole stitch. Those bands they make my heart sing as I'm stitching them. So I've only partially stitched the top bands. Mm. I'm treating myself to the bottom bands as well. I do an hour top band, and then the rest of my stitching session is the bottom band.
Okay. Eating the dessert first. You know, once it's gone, see, then it's fruits and vegetables, so be careful.
It is, yeah. Yes, it is.
So how, is this big sampler?
The size sampler is about 130 stitches wide by about 480-odd stitches long.
Okay, so long.
And that's the it's a long one, but it's very narrow. And what's lovely about a band sampler, that each band is achievable. You break it down into lots of little samplers, and I think it's very rewarding when you get to the end of a band. One done.
That's the fun thing about band samplers is you get those little accomplishments all the way along. Yes.
You do, which is really, really lovely. I love band samplers. I think they're very rewarding to work, and they just look so lovely when they're framed and hung. So much colour in so many of them. These little girls, you know, they really enjoy their colour. When you think back to the past, you tend to think in black and white, and you tend to think in dark colours.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I think, you know, the Georgians loved colour. Their colours are strong and vivid. And it's just, I always remember going to Whitney Antiques and Joy Jarrett bringing out this sampler that had never been finished, so it had never been displayed. And she unwrapped it, and it was like, boing, you know, the colours just jumped out at you, and they were just absolutely wonderful. And of course, we're used to seeing faded colours on these samplers, so it's just lovely to see the colours as they were originally.
Yeah, well, that's the little bit you've shown of the Bathaya thing. Those are vivid colours. That's just beautiful stuff. Yeah, that's exciting. Mm. Yes.
And those are the actual colours, Gary. You know, those are the perfect colours to match the colours on the original sampler. And you know, that sampler, those colours are there because it was never exposed to light. Or, you know, for 70-odd years, it was not exposed to light.
Yeah, real treat there. Okay, we're gonna run out of time.
Okay.
I've been watching the clock, Christine. So it's not surprising me this time, because usually I'm not paying attention to that. But we gotta talk about, you're coming to the States now next year.
I am. Yes.
And so we have you coming to Sassy Jack's. In was it North or South Carolina? I forget.
It's in North Carolina, in Asheville. And Sassy Jack Stitchery, it's so lovely to see and read about an actual bricks and mortar store opening.
Yes.
And I met Kimberly last year in person in England. And she's such a lovely lady. And she's given up a very, very successful career in corporate America to open this store. So it's a massive change of career for her. And, you know, she's pouring her heart and soul into Sassy Jack's. And I'm just very grateful to sort of be invited to take part in this, because it's a whole series of lectures that she's got running for it. I think there's five lectures that are running over a period of a year. And the first lecture is on the 14th of August with Susan Greening Davis. And Susan will present some examples of antique samplers, and they will include some darning samplers. And you'll be able to study those, and Susan will talk about them. And then she's also going to do a blackwork workshop after the lecture as well. I'm going to be there for 2 days, on January the 6th and January the 7th. And on both days, I will be doing a presentation on some antique samplers that I'm going to be bringing with me. And we'll talk about those samplers, and we'll be talking about the history of samplers. And then I'm going to have a small workshop in the afternoon. And what I'm planning to do is to show how to stitch a freehand flower head, and then how to stitch a counted thread flower head. And we're going to explore stem stitch, satin stitches, and French knots as well. And it's only a small little project, but hopefully everybody at the end of the day will be taking home this little completed design that I've come up with. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to doing that. And it'd be the same thing on both days. I think that lots of people are signing up already. So, you know, if people are interested, contact Kimberly and, you know, get your name down. But also, just don't consider the days I'm coming. Look at the whole series of lectures that Sassy Jacks have got on.
And then, okay, then Sassy Jacks, and then you're going to then go from there to Phoenix, to the Attic?
Oh, I know. I'm so excited to be going to the Attic. It's been on my bucket list for so long. On the Monday, I fly to Phoenix, and I plan to spend Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday at the Attic. So I'm hoping that people will come along and meet me. People I've sort of been chatting to on Facebook and social media, it'd be really, really nice to meet them and sit down and spend some time stitching with them. And then on the Friday, the January symposium starts, which it's very, very exciting. And on the Saturday, I'll be doing a presentation, and it's going to be based on a journey through time. And we're going to do some time travel with samplers. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's just
that's her big her big winter gathering, right? That you'll be at.
That's right. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I'm just so honoured to be invited to go there. Just amazing. Yeah. I keep on pinching myself to make sure it's true, but it is true because it's announced in the newsletter.
Yes. Yeah. Can't get out of it now. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, because that's a big deal there in the winter.
Yes, yeah.
I'm sure. I think she sells that thing out every year without any trouble at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And Sigrid is coming as well, which is going to be absolutely
lovely.
Oh,
really?
Yes.
Oh my.
Yes, and Torsten.
Wow, it's going to be a whole thing here. You're going to have, oh boy, what fun!
Yes, be lovely. Looking forward to that. So,
is Sigrid going to do a presentation, or is she?
No, she's coming to participate in the symposium.
Oh, okay, great.
So, because it's been a dream of Sigrid's to go to the Attic as well. You know, I think the Attic is on the top of so many people's bucket lists.
Yes, yes. Oh, fantastic. So you'll be in the States, what, better part of 2 weeks then?
Yes, nearly 2 weeks. Yeah, be great. And then I'm back again end of February for Nashville. Market.
Oh.
Which is, and we were hoping to come back again as well for the Masters, but unfortunately we didn't get any tickets, so that'll have to be another year.
Yeah.
So, but
well,
it's a busy couple of months coming up for me. I'm doing a class at Thobel's in the UK on the 4th of September, and I'm looking forward to linking up with some UK stitchers there. And then on the 5th of September, I'm joining a party of Americans that are coming over on a tour with Susan Green and Davis. And I joined this tour party last year, and there was such a lovely group of ladies, and they were all having a wonderful time on this tour. So I'm looking forward to meeting up with the tour party again this year. And I don't know if anybody's interested, but I think they may have one or two spaces left. The tour is a really lovely itinerary. They start off in Oxford, and then they go to Hardwick Hall, which is a wonderful place to see needlework. They take in Ackworth School in York and Gawthorpe Hall. And I'll be joining them in Bath. And they go on to Bristol to see the Mueller Museum, and then they go to Whitney to go to Whitney Antiques, which I can't ever leave without coming home with a sampler. And then for me, what would be the highlight on that tour would be to see the Feller collection. The Feller collection is the most amazing collection, and that has to be the topic of another talk one day, Gary.
Okay. All right.
We can do that.
We
can't just talk about that for a few minutes. It's just the most wonderful place to go. Oh, and the other place that Susan's tour is going to is to the Fitzwilliam to view the Sampled Lives exhibition.
Oh.
So if anybody's interested, the tour is in, it starts on, when does it start? It starts on the 31st of August. So, you know, that's something that's really well worth doing. I think it's 8 nights. And you get to see some wonderful collections.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Quite the tour, yes.
Yeah. And I think possibly for people who live abroad, it's an organized tour is the way to go to another country to see examples of needlework. You know, if you're coming over to look at needlework, I think that if you were coming over by yourself, it would be very hard to access all these collections and to move around the country. And I think as well that Susan is just so knowledgeable about needlework and about the places that the tour goes to, that you get to see the highlights, and you know she has such knowledge that you will get the most out of visiting those places.
Okay, I can't come in August, but I'm all right, we got to end this thing. Oh boy, yeah. this has been a fun ride. Thanks for filling in for Christine for all the stuff. And, coming up Sunday, Nicole Neville of Nicole's Needlework. We had a great time. You know, this is the Nicole who never hangs anything on our walls. So,
she has a little one there now.
I know, the one poor thing. She claims that there's others, you just can't see them. But, yeah, she's going to have to show them or I'm not believing her. But, had a great conversation with Nicole. So that's coming up Sunday. And, in 2 weeks, we recorded with Vonna Pfeiffer again. Oh, that was a great conversation, too. So, but Nicole Neville on Sunday and Nicola, what a treat. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Really enjoyed it. All right. Thanks to everyone for listening and for the continued support.